Apple updated all the things today, Dan.
All of the things. So many things. Some things that I really didn't... Well, I mean, some updates, some new stuff. Did you expect Apple to make a battery case? Is that a thing that was on your radar?
No, although...
makes sense, I guess.
And, you know, I slept in today a little bit. and I thought, well, you know, I could check. In fact,
Tuesday. What's going to happen?
I made my breakfast and I had my tea and I thought I could get out the iPad and see what was going on in the world. And I thought, you know, I'm reading a book. I'm enjoying the book I'm reading. I'm just going to read some more of the book instead and I'll get to that later. It's not like Apple's going to be dropping a whole bunch of new products today or anything. Yeah, turns out. But that battery case, what it reminded me of is, I know I keep coming back to the iPod Hi-Fi. I do have one on my desk, so why not go back there? But iPod Hi-Fi totally existed as a product because Steve Jobs was really mad that some other companies had cornered the market on the iPod speaker dock thing.
Right.
And were making lots of money, like the Bose sound dock, right? Making just so much money. And so they created the iPod Hi-Fi and said, well, we can make a product that is even more expensive,
right.
but we'll sell it in our stores and we'll capture some of the money. And it flopped. But, you know, I feel like they've had success with other products, right? Like the great advantage Apple has of cases is they're the only cases that can have the Apple logo on them.
Yep.
And they know in advance what the shape of the product is, so they're available in volume on day one in Apple's own retail stores, and they're the most prominently placed. So though you can, and people do buy other cases, Apple has so many advantages in the case market, and they're upselling people to those cases, that it's like a really good moneymaker for them.
Well, I was trying to look this up. They made which model of iPhone was it? They made a case that was like a leather case and it cost like $100. There was some very early, it was either, I don't think it was the original, it might have been the 3G
right.
Sling, but they made like a super, they're like, we made a primo leather case and it's $100. And everybody out there who's like, back in the day when there was Macworld Expo and you would walk, like you would trip over iPhone cases that people were just throwing at you. It was like, who's going to pay $100 for a leather case? So I see this as a step forward in some ways because if you compare it to other battery cases on the market, it's not necessarily the best one out there, but it does have the advantage, as you said, of being first party. It's not bad, though. $100 for a battery case is pretty reasonable. You can get cheaper ones. You can also get more expensive ones, depending on what you want. It doesn't necessarily have the best battery life either, but it does have built-in lightning, and it does have like integration with the software and stuff like that, because you can look at the case battery level in Notification Center and stuff like that. So it's like, hey, if that's important to you, great. You know, it's, I think they'll sell some. I don't think it's like a huge product for them, but it's probably, I mean, it's a piece of the pie, right? Like you said, everybody else is making money. Why not Apple?
They're gonna skim some money off the top here because they're gonna have one and it's gonna be prominently placed and it's gonna have the Apple logo on it and it's gonna be in, you know, it's gonna be in all the stores and it's gonna be the first probably that a lot of the salespeople will suggest, right? Is do you want the Apple battery case with that? Here's what it does. And and it's pricey, but it's also got, you know, it's got features, right? It's got the fact that it's you can plug in lightning into it and it'll charge the battery and the phone, and that's that has to do with like more expensive components than most case makers are willing to put into their cases because they're really worried about margins and competing on price at a level that Apple kind of isn't.
Well, plus it means that they have to give, don't they have to like give them more, I don't know. A lot of them have, I guess, maybe a
bigger licensing connectors, features. Yeah.
But yeah. Well, the other thing, okay, so let's talk about the elephant in the room is that it looks like an elephant. No, the elephant in the room is that it has a giant hump on the back.
More of a dromedary.
More of a dromedary. which I've read a couple, I haven't handled one, but I've read a couple of the reviews about it, which say, you know, it feels okay from like a use perspective, but I don't think you can argue that it's not unsightly. Like it looks weird.
It doesn't look great. The Verge
it's
had
a nice
piece about how speculating that some of the design decisions are because of
patents, right?
That Mophie has.
Yeah, yeah. Which makes sense. I mean, but that and the other weird design choices, like putting in an LED that tells you if the battery's low or not, but it's inside the case, like behind the phone. Yeah. What? Okay.
Yeah, it does use the battery widget thing that
right.
is an iOS 9, which is kind of cool. So you can, like, from the notification center, and this works with the Apple Pencil too, for example. And I think the Magic
watch
keyboard
too, right?
Yeah. Yeah, you can see like what's my percentage battery.
Yeah, it's clever.
Device.
Again, like we're talking about, you know, it's something that Apple can do integration that nobody else can really do easily, and that may be worth money to some people. But
yeah, but it doesn't look good, and I'm not a battery case person myself because I have never been in a situation where I felt like I needed more battery every day on my phone, and I have had external batteries, and that's what I do is like if I'm worried about my phone life, my phone range, I will bring the external battery pack and a cable, and at some point I'll top up using the external battery pack, but I never felt like I wanted to stick a whole battery case. I know there's a whole market of that, and that's fine, but I've never really understood that, mostly probably because of how I use my phone, where I figured like I'd rather just have a little battery somewhere that I can bring out when I get desperate. And with iOS 9, you've also got the
low power mode,
which is really nice and does a very good job of it. We should also say these aren't available for the Plus models, which have a bigger battery and longer battery life. It's just for the 6 and 6S.
Yeah, and I transitioned. I did have a couple Mophie cases for earlier iPhones, but at some point I think I stopped buying them maybe with the 5 because every time it's just like I need a new case like every other year or something like that, which seems silly. You know, I was like, I'm not going to, when they change the form factor, I run out and buy a new battery case. Like I'm dropping a lot more money. And so I switched over to just buying, you know, a small external battery pack for travel. And I think it's definitely a little more bulky when you need to carry it, but as opposed to being bulky all of the time, it's not that bad. You know, it's a fair trade off. I didn't think that, I mean, the Mophies are good cases. I like them just fine, but it seemed like a bad investment for me because after a year I'd be like, well, I got a brand new phone, doesn't fit that case, guess I'll throw that case in the drawer. And I was lucky enough to be able to like at least give it away to people who had older iPhones, but yeah, I don't know, didn't work for me, so move on to the external batteries. That wasn't the only new ish accessory though. We also got an updated version of the iPhone a Lightning to SD card reader that works with the iPhone, which it previously did not.
Yeah, I was always baffled by that. Like, why would you withhold that feature from the iPhone? I don't know if there was a technical reason, like the Lightning ports in the iPhone are not the same.
Well,
somehow
there can't be because they're backwards compatible. Like, these run back to the iPhone 5 now. So in theory,
right,
you know, if it worked then, it probably, you know, or if it works now, it probably should have worked then. I wonder if it was like a competitive advantage sort of thing where it's like, oh, I mean, it strikes me as one of those bizarre Apple things where they're like, who wants to load? Like, yeah, you can bring your iPad. Your iPad's your new computer. You can bring that and load your those pictures you took on it with the other camera that you've got that's not an iPhone. But you know, who would want to do that on the iPhone, you know? And that strikes me as a sort of bizarre, esoteric decision that Apple might make.
Yeah, I don't get it.
But it was perplexing. And
I think the most exciting thing about this product is that it's also using the extra, there's some extra pins on the Lightning connector on the iPad Pro that allow it to do USB 3 essentially. So it will do USB 3 speeds on an iPad Pro. So you can download those photos extra speedy, extra fast.
Well, and I got to think that presages that basically everything that updates next year will have that. So, you know, and which makes sense because Apple hasn't really spent a lot of time. I mean, all the Macs have USB 3 ports now, but they haven't really spent the time updating Lightning ports to match that. So
right,
that makes sense.
Yeah,
but it's nice. And I mean, I guess if you're a pro photographer or someone who's like maybe wants to use an iPad Pro as your sort of where you're dumping all your photos from your photo shoots, that's nice.
That's great. But I think it's a much more reasonable use case that you're out shooting somewhere and you want to offload and you know your photos and you've got a big iPhone, you know, plenty of storage and being able to copy that stuff back and very quickly drop some things in albums and share things and do whatever. That makes so much sense. And yes.
Yeah, I just don't know who's taking pictures with standalone cameras still. No. I guess there are some, but
there
it strikes me as fewer than it used to be.
It is fewer than it used to. I mean, I still do occasionally, but it's way less than it used to be. When we went on our family vacation this summer, I didn't even bring it because I thought we're it's a road trip, and the phone cameras are good enough. They're not great, but they're good enough. And although we sacrificed some image quality by doing that, we didn't have to carry that camera around and worry mm-hmm. about leaving it in the car and having it be stolen. And it just wasn't a problem. We just didn't bother. And but I do occasionally do it. And I do have those moments when I'm out and shooting with it that I think it's stupid because I can't share that stuff.
Right.
And so this is a way to you could theoretically do that. It's still not as what you really want to do is be able to tether a camera to a phone and have it kind of shoot it over there. And the iFi does, you can get an iFi card that sort of does that, but it's kind of wonky. And
It's a workaround. Yeah. It's kludge.
Yeah.
Related to that, actually, and in the vein of Apple updating things, the iOS 9.2 update, which showed up today, mm-hmm. also backports the iPhone USB camera to Lightning camera connector so that it works with the iPhone. Mm. So I guess they just, maybe they're just like, they got like a list somewhere on a whiteboard and they're just checking stuff off. Like, oh, hey, well, we're going to release this new Lightning SD card adapter. Should we make that old iPhone, the USB one, work with the iPhone? Yeah, let's do that. But someone, I think, was it one of our fellow podcasters, The Incomparable, was this suggesting that, wondering if that would enable the USB microphones?
Yeah, I saw that. It's possible. I don't know how much power Lightning...
Yeah.
It sounds like some microphones draw too much power and the iPad doesn't want to power them, and others are okay with it. I think you can pretty much use any USB microphone with it if you run it through a powered hub. Mm-hmm. But that's the thing, is like if the device doesn't supply enough power. But yeah, I mean, if this opens up the iPhone to more stuff that you can attach via USB, then that's good. That's a good thing.
Yeah, I'm skeptical about how broadly they'll take that, but
yeah.
it certainly is a nice side benefit.
Yeah.
9.2, are there any other improvements in that you thought were particularly...
Well, the big one for me, there's some bugs for the iPad Pro in 9.1 that involve things like the software keyboard staying slid up when you've got an external keyboard attached, especially the smart connector stuff. And it's a really embarrassing bug that it was not good. And it fixes that. It addresses some other keyboard problems. So I think maybe not all the kind of weird keyboard problems that are going on with the iPad Pro. I think it's still got some bugs in it. But it addressed some of that. So that's something that I noticed. I actually downloaded one of the betas of 9.2 when I started using the iPad Pro because it was not... 9.1 was not that great with the iPad Pro, even though it shipped with it. So there's some improvements there that'll be good for anybody who's bought an iPad Pro.
Yeah, I was the one that got me, which is... I was kind of small in there, but I didn't realize wasn't already there, was Mail Drop.
Yeah, Mail Drop on the iOS side, because that was a feature that was in El Capitan, where if you drag a big attachment into Apple Mail, instead of trying to attach it and shove it through a mail server, it uploads it to iCloud and puts a link to the download from iCloud in the email. So it's like auto Dropbox, essentially, except it uses iCloud to do it, and it's essentially transparent.
And so transparent that I could never tell if it was actually working or not.
I know, that's one of the problems. And I think it would actually send the email while it was still uploading the file. Mm. So if people got the email immediately and clicked on it, they got a note, sort of like what Dropbox does too, which says this file isn't there yet. It's currently uploading. Please come back in a few minutes. But it is, it's so silent. But now you can do that. I mean, some people may not even realize that you can attach files in iOS Mail. And if you get the little insertion point, if you hold down your finger and you get the little menu that pops up, one of the options, I think you have to go to the sort of second level there, is add attachment. And it totally works. I was working in a text editor, OneWriter on the iPad Pro, and I wanted to email the file to my editor at Macworld, and I was able to share it. I basically did share to email, and it showed up as an attachment, and I was like, oh, look at that. It's like a real computer.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's gotten much better, especially with iOS 8, iOS 9, the access to sort of like the document chooser.
What we used to call a file system, but is not that. We can't, don't call it a file system, but files. Access to files from other places that you can do things with.
But it's cool that it's not only restricted to iCloud, but you can, like, the third-party developers can register themselves. So, like, if you want to go in and save something to, like, Google Drive, yeah, you can do that. Or, you know, the one exception I found is Dropbox, which has not done whatever jiggery pokery it needs to do in order to enable that. You can do it. They have their own little shortcut. Maybe that's why they haven't bothered. But if you go to the sort of the different locations, Dropbox always says it's not available for moving files to, which bums me out.
Yeah, that makes me sad too. You can do it with Office 365.
Yes, OneDrive.
OneDrive, yeah.
OneDrive. Yeah, that's what we're calling it now.
Yeah. And iCloud Drive, of course.
Yeah, there are a bunch of other nice... I mean, 9.2 in general seems like there were a ton of bug fixes. And some other weird... I mean, Siri support for Arabic. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And
there was some Apple... other... there's some Apple Music
confusing
additions. And it is confusing because that's the sort of thing where it's in the release notes that these features were added. And then somebody on Twitter was saying how he thought those features were already there, but they're in the release notes. So it's unclear whether there's just a misunderstanding there or whether maybe he was on the beta track and saw them but didn't realize he was on a beta. Or we're not quite sure about that.
Yeah, they're specific to Apple Music as opposed to like the iCloud Music Library, which is actually a separate thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's that. Meanwhile, 10.11.2 was pretty sparse for improvements. I'm hoping it fixes some bugs, but I'm not super optimistic. For example, I have the disappearing favorites in the sidebar bug, which is in the open and save dialog boxes a lot of times. You open it up and it like removes stuff from your sidebar,
yep,
which is pretty annoying. So I'm wondering if that'll fit fixed in 10.11.2. I'm not super optimistic because it seems like one of those really difficult to track down ones, but it's nice. I saw there were some Wi-Fi improvements, which is good. More Wi-Fi improvements are never a bad thing.
Always good. Non-specific Wi-Fi improvements.
Yeah. And then as you wrote up a little later, there were some improvements for Apple TV too. So remote apps.
Yeah. So Apple TV, it's TVOS 9.1. Is what they're calling it,
and which is weird because everything else is a 0.2 today, and that's a 0.1.
Yeah,
we're a little behind.
So it was a fast update. Like you're used to the sort of like, I'll download this, it'll take 5 minutes on the iPhone, mm-hmm, and with this it downloaded it in like 20 seconds. It was hilarious.
Someone forgot to flip a switch.
Yeah, and then it takes a little while because it's got to unpack it and get it ready to go, and it reboots the device and you know stuff like that. But in the end, two banner features for that. One being the support for the old remote app, which, you know, famously when it shipped, you couldn't control it from your iPhone other than the initial setup, which it had integrated into iOS 9. But the old remote app that used to work with the old Apple TVs let you do things like type your passwords and stuff on your iPhone, or even use your iPhone as the remote and slide your finger around on the screen like you were doing it on. And that one didn't even have a trackpad remote, but it was like that. It's very much like the same interaction that we see now on this one, where it's a trackpad interaction. And it didn't work with the new one. And it was really baffling. Like, why would there not be a way, especially when you're setting up a system and you have to enter in passwords? It's so painful. And I've got this touchscreen device in my pocket. Let me just put the passwords in there.
Yeah.
And they didn't update the remote app. That's the funny thing. The remote app is unchanged. What they did was in tvOS 9.1, they seemed to have done whatever they needed to do, turned on the server or whatever in the operating system that provides that compatibility where it's looking, you know, it's putting out a signal on the network that it's available for remote control and connecting to the remote app and letting the remote app tell it what to do. Why it wasn't there at launch, who knows why. I think it was a mistake that it wasn't there. Perhaps it just wasn't ready and they were going to ship it anyway. But this, going into the holidays, this will make setting up new Apple TVs that you get for Hanukkah or Christmas or any other reason after today much better, because you'll be able to pull out your iPhone and put in the usernames and passwords. That's nice.
Yeah, still no Bluetooth keyboard support. I tried to pair a keyboard with it earlier.
Oh, well.
That did not work. And I don't know, I still think that there's, you know, hope for an iCloud keychain implementation maybe someday down the road, since that would make it even easier.
That there's so much logic in doing that.
Yeah, I don't understand, but it is a step in the right direction. And at least there it provides some sort of stopgap for those features
for the painful setup. Because once you get the setup, I think it's a pretty neat device. But the setup, if you've got a lot of usernames and passwords to input, it is not helpful. And this is a good way to just say, look, you've got an iPhone. You're comfortable typing on the iPhone. You don't have to use the on-screen thing. You can just type in the letters and it works. And and if you want to search, you can type in the letters.
Right.
Speaking of which, Siri remote. One of the other baffling kind of missing pieces was the Siri stuff wasn't tied in on the Apple TV with music at all.
Right.
Even though, you know, it works on the iPhone, it did not work on the Apple TV. It just didn't know anything about the music stuff. And now it does, which is great. It's got a whole... it's connected to the music app. It's got things that you can do. I successfully told it the same thing that I can do to my iPhone about shuffle this playlist, you know, mm-hmm. give it the playlist name. Totally works, starts playing, brings up a little dialogue that says, would you like to basically open music, and you can menu back out of it or just sit there and not do anything, and it'll play the music where you are, which is kind of cool. If you're somewhere else, like looking at an app or something, and you want the music to start playing, it will not forcibly take you away from the music app in that case. It's kind of neat. But some of the searches I did, while they worked,
for certain values work.
Yeah, they did something, but the results were bad. The search results were bad. And I think that maybe has more to do with what results are being fed back to the device than it is, you know, the voice recognition worked fine. But when I wanted to see the album Hamilton, which is the Broadway musical, mm-hmm. it gave me an album by some hip-hop artist named somebody Hamilton. I thought, that's strange, because he's not an album, and presumably there's more than one artist named Hamilton, and they have more than one album, so it was a strange, it was like they gave me the top hit, like, for a particular thing, rather than giving me search results, which would have been more logical, since it seemed way more confident about that this was the Hamilton I was looking for than it should have been. And then I asked to show artist Randy Newman, and it gave me a Pixar music album with You've Got a Friend in Me selected, which I'll grant you is by Randy Newman. But what it didn't do, and when I searched the music app manually for Randy Newman, the top hit was artist Randy Newman. And so, again, I had that moment of like, well, why did you pick this? And why did you dive into the number one, or whatever you decided was the number one response, instead of showing a menu of the options that you thought it would be? Because the advantage of using your voice to search is you don't have to type in that stuff, not that you never have to interact and it's going to go exactly where you want it to go. And so just showing the search results would have been close enough, certainly, unless it's very confident that what you're searching for is what it's providing for you. And in both those cases, my first two searches for that sort of thing were basically failures. They didn't know what they were doing.
Yeah, Siri search on music has always been kind of hit or miss for me, especially in the 3 months that I was using Apple Music. As I think I wrote about the time, one of the biggest annoyances for me was I would ask it to play an artist or a song that I had in my library, and it would either misunderstand slightly or just, like, you know, start playing stuff from... Essentially, it would start playing stuff from Apple Music rather than assuming I would want to play the stuff that was in my own library first.
Right.
And that is, just kind of annoying, because it's like, well, why you start playing this other artist? You know, in that case, if you had Hamilton in your library and it started playing a song, you know, this Hamilton artist from Apple Music instead, you'd be like, what in the world about me makes you think I want to hear that instead of the music I've actually purchased or downloaded? So, but bizarre choices in the search. But that's why Apple's not a search company.
Yeah, and I think it's the same, you know, it's the same search back end that's driving that stuff. So, so it's stuff that is fixable on the server side, but it's a challenge. My go-to is always, you know, play this playlist or shuffle this playlist, because I get to name those, and it seems to understand that there's a very finite number of playlists. It expects it to be my playlists, and it can do a pretty good job of finding mm-hmm. them. So that's my number one success story with Siri for music on either iOS or tvOS. But it's still a work in progress for sure.
Good for you, Siri.
Yeah, it's getting there.
Keep on trucking.
It's getting there. No podcast app on Apple TV yet, which is a little surprising. I figured they'd have one.
Podcasts are, they're not, yeah, they're not important
great.
Enough.
They're not that great.
You
want to
watch podcasts on your television, Jason? That's nuts.
No one listens to podcasts. I did actually hear from a bunch of people when I sent out the email about the existence of this secret podcast, from people who, some people emailed, I got a couple emails that were like, I don't listen to podcasts. This is useless to me. To which I say, well, we never promised it to you. And
it's free.
Just don't worry about it. Don't listen. It's not required. You don't have to listen.
If you're listening now, I thought you told us you weren't going to listen.
Yeah. Oh. So that's the other part of it. I also heard from some people who never listened to podcasts and tried to listen to this podcast and found it difficult.
And just because of the way we talk is what you're saying.
Well, so it turns out that if you subscribing to podcasts is actually kind of complicated. If you click on an RSS link, Macs are configured to try and launch either Safari shared links or go to an RSS client, neither of which is what a podcast wants. You actually want to copy the URL. And a lot of people don't know, if you go to iTunes and you go to the file menu, there is a subscribe to podcast item in the file menu. That's what you want to use. Or if you're in an app that's a podcast app, you can usually get an add RSS feed. Instead of searching a directory, you can add the RSS feed and you can paste it in there, and that works too. But a lot of people hadn't really gone through that before, or hadn't done anything but go find a podcast on iTunes, which this isn't on iTunes because we don't want people to find it because it's a secret. It's not a secret that it exists. In fact, Mike Hurley posted a screenshot that revealed its existence. I'm fine for people. I want people to know it exists and be jealous and want to subscribe to Six Colors because they want to hear what we're saying about them.
You can't get this anywhere else, folks. This is gold.
It's gold, baby. So, I do want people to hear about it, because I don't want non-subscribers to listen. And if you are a non-subscriber, I don't know why you're here.
Shame on you.
No shame. Just consider being a subscriber, because you shouldn't be here unless you're a subscriber. So, it was interesting and educational to run into people, given so much of what we do with our careers right now is podcasting, that there are also people for whom podcasting is but a rumor. And I hadn't really noticed that before. I hadn't really thought about that. So that was interesting. And hopefully some of those people did get it put in their podcast listener app of choice, podcasts on iOS or maybe iTunes on the Mac.
Perhaps have even listened.
Perhaps they're even listening now.
Welcome.
Yeah.
You've taken your first step into a larger world.
And possibly your last. But
that's an extra secret.
Yes, follow us through to the other secret. So Dan, we're not going to run on too much longer. This is not supposed to be a super long podcast. We're doing these holiday things. We posted we posted one yesterday about iOS and Apple TV games. There's going to be one Wednesday morning, tomorrow morning, about games like card and board games and stuff, which was fun. Indeed. That you and I both had a collection of things, and that was fun to put together. And we've got a few coming in the next week or two. They're like holiday gift guide things, except we're not quite, hopefully, as we're really writing about things we like and our opinions about stuff, and not doing what we used to do at Macworld, which was the grind of write a million articles about every product that could possibly exist in a holiday context.
Yeah. So lucky you, no Mac related cookie cutters.
Yeah.
The game stuff is especially fun to write.
Yeah.
I actually found myself being a little self-selective because there are a couple things I kind of wanted to I just got this game, but I'm like, I haven't played this game yet. I don't know if I can recommend it in good faith until I've actually tried playing it. So I had a couple of those moments where it's like, okay, well, this is inspiring me to go out and check out some new stuff too. So I hope it is illuminating and interesting for others to read, and perhaps you find some good ideas for yourself or for other people in this holiday season.
And a little behind the scenes tidbit is that if you read the iOS games one and you think, wow, Jason really likes puzzle games because he wrote about a lot of puzzle games, here's the truth. My wife loves puzzle games.
Mm.
And I she's completely secretive, uncredited, not mentioned in the story, but she deeply informed that my write-ups in that story. Like, literally, I sat her down and said, what are the games you liked this year? And several of those puzzle games made the list because she plays those and I don't really. And so that was kind of fun to do that. But
I feel like last time I saw her, actually, she was giving me tips on Grim Fandango because I was totally stuck.
I think so. I think that may be the case.
It's good to have a resource in your life for helping you through puzzle games. I think that's important.
Yeah, it's good. It's a good thing. So we'll have some more of those. And we're also, we were just talking before we started the podcast about putting together the first issue of the Six Colors magazine, which I'm hoping we'll get out next week sometime before the holidays really kick into gear, before Christmas is around the corner. And as always, I'll say that if you have things you would like to see in there, send us an email. You can send me an email, jsnell@sixcolors.com. We'll do it. And we'll try to integrate some subscriber requests in the first issue. And then once the first issue is out, I'm sure everybody will have opinions about what they'd like to see. I'm going to set some expectations here. This is not going to be like Macworld or something. It's not going to be 60 pages of editorial once a month. That's not going to happen. It's going to be a few articles that we write just for the subscribers, and we don't post on the website. But
there's only two of us, folks.
This is true. So don't expect anything, and you'll be pleasantly surprised. How about that?
Set your expectations so low.
Better
than
nothing.
We're not taking content away from you, so that's pretty good.
But we're going to give you some extra stuff that nobody else gets to see. And you know, in a few months, we'll probably reveal issue one somewhere publicly, so people can see what the newsletter looks like. But we're working on it. We'll have some pieces, and you'll be the only ones to see them. Just like you're the only ones, right? The only ones to hear this
super secret podcast.
Okay, well, we will talk to you again perhaps next week. And thank you for subscribing to the Super Secret Podcast, and thank you for subscribing in turn to Six Colors. Happy Hanukkah! Actually, it's third night of Hanukkah tonight. Four candles. Third night, four candles, because you start with two, because you have the Shamus in the middle.
No, it's not a detective.
No, it's not a Seamus. It's the Shamus.
Oh, okay. All right.
It's the detective. That's the noir Hanukkah. That's a totally different
thing. That's my favorite. Hanwaruka is my favorite holiday.
Anyway, my wife is Jewish, so we do the Hanukkah thing. We have all the menorahs, and then we also have Christmas. So we're going to run out of presents for the kids before Christmas is what I'm saying. Oh, well. Happy holidays to everybody out there, and thanks for listening to The Secret Podcast. Goodbye.
Bye.